As a young man, Bryce Andrews was happy tending livestock on ranches as a cowboy in Montana. But when he was given an heirloom Smith & Wesson revolver, he began to feel the weight of history in his chosen profession. In his book, Holding Fire, Andrews describes his journey to transform the gun into a tool that could repair some of the violence that has shaped the Western United States through past generations. The book is out in paperback now, but the message still resonates as the country grapples with its legacy of guns. Bryce Andrews spoke with me when Holding Fire was published last February. And I want you to tell me about this gun. It was a revolver that you inherited from your grandfather. It seemed to me, Bryce, that you were both in awe of this weapon and also simultaneously disgusted by it.
I think that's a fair characterization, but I also think it's true that my relationship with the gun changed tremendously over the time that I owned it. I certainly felt awe at the power of it, the precision and beauty and craftsmanship. And then also at the beginning, when I first received the gun as a gift, I really felt like it tied me into a history or a lineage of men in the West. And at the time, it made me very happy to be part of that. But as I owned the gun and used it and thought about it in the context of my work as a rancher and my life here in Montana, I began to have some significant doubts.
Yeah, and I do want to ask you what you eventually decide to do with this gun, because that's the heart of this story. But first, let's talk about hunting. You tell a story in the book about the first time that you shot a deer. It was a fawn, so it was an accident. You know, you didn't mean to shoot a fawn. But hunting was something that you came to enjoy. Tell me about that. What appealed to you about hunting?
What's always appealed to me about hunting is it caused me to be out in the mountains, seeing sunrises and sunsets and parts of the landscape I would otherwise never have seen or experienced. I liked that opportunity. And I also liked that my food, because I always hunted to eat, that my food would come from an intact wild ecosystem. The immediacy of that relationship with the ecosystem, I think, is what kept me hunting, even though I've never liked the killing.
Well, and that's why I bring this up, because you were even a good hunter. You described yourself as a good, sure shot. I mean, you're comfortable with guns. You understand how they're used as tools and the value that they bring. But you also described another side to hunting, which was a darker side that you saw in some hunters or even in the poachers that showed up on the land that you managed. What did you see over the years that changed your view of hunting?
You know, I started to have these doubts surrounding the way many people were pursuing hunting because I watched the way certain hunters, and almost always these were men, treated the animals that they were killing. It seemed to me that they were treating the animals in a way that not only was profoundly and completely without respect, kicking a dead animal or killing animals they didn't need to, but they treated the animals in a way that expressed, I don't know of a better way to say it, I think latent rage at the natural world. And as I watched people operate in that way, I started to have these feelings that there was something profoundly off or unhealthy in the way that we were dealing with the act of killing and the tools of killing in the American West.
And so here we are with your grandfather's revolver, which of course is not a hunting rifle, but it is a symbol of, I think, that violence that you're describing. And there is a point when you decide that you don't want it anymore, and you even consider throwing it into the Puget Sound. Was that painful for you when you came to understand that?
I think, you know, for me, the turning point with my relationship with that gun is when it began to engender in me not just feelings of discomfort, but self-destructive impulses. There's a particularly difficult winter that I spent on a ranch where I started to look at that gun and feel just how easy it would be to hurt myself with it. It takes me back to something that an older rancher once told me, and he said, when a guy buys a backhoe, everything starts looking like it needs to be a hole. And I often thought about that when I was thinking about the gun, because we keep so many of these deadly weapons around us. And the tools we surround ourselves with matter, because tools exert a pressure upon us to use them. So I came to this realization that having this gun around was not a good thing for me, and that I wanted to be rid of it. But it was really painful, as you suggest, to think about throwing it away. You know, I would think, okay, I could throw this thing into the ocean. I could throw it into the crack in a glacier. But though I wanted to change what I had inherited from my grandfather, I didn't necessarily want to destroy it. I didn't want to dishonor his gift. And that was kind of a conundrum for me when I first started thinking about what to do with the gun.
What'd you come up with? How did you solve that conundrum?
Basically by remaking the gun. I went through all these scenarios where I thought, oh, I could do this to it. I could do that to it. And what I finally decided to do was to learn enough of the rudiments of blacksmithing to turn this gun into a different tool with a very different set of affinities and possibilities. And I did that with the help of an amazing smith named Jeffrey Funk, who runs a blacksmithing program called the New Agrarian School.
Well, and thank goodness for Jeffrey Funk, because you had no idea. I mean, you're a very handy person, but it sounds like you had no idea how to melt a gun down in an incredibly hot fire and make something new. So talk about what you had to learn to make this happen.
Well, I had to learn a lot. I mean, if Jeffrey was here, he would be waving his hand right now and saying, actually, we didn't melt it down. Because if we had melted it down, we would have lost some of the properties of the steel that made the gun steel very useful as a tool. Instead, Jeffrey was teaching me how to do all of the steps to take a very complex object that's full of voids and holes. Because, you know, a revolver has a barrel, it has cylinders. And we were essentially collapsing that and then turning it into a piece of steel that could be used for forging a strong, useful tool.
And it's a huge risk, because if you mess it up while you're forging this new tool, the gun itself is ruined and you have nothing to show for it. What did that feel like?
It was very nerve-wracking to think, you know, I only have this one gun to work with. And that really made me intent on doing the work correctly. And it made me lean on Jeffrey. It also really made me think about the fact that as we look at making similar changes with the way we treat other less tangible forms of inheritance in the West and elsewhere, we have to exercise the same kind of care, because there's real value and real preciousness in what we inherit.
I may be ruining the surprise here, but you didn't mess up the gun or even the new tool at all, because it was beautiful. It even had traces of its previous form. Can you describe the final product? What did you end up with?
What I ended up making is a tree planting spade. It looks sort of like a whale diving. It has this wide tail that's used for scraping the sod away, and it has a long, narrow kind of spade at the front that's used for digging a hole to put a seedling tree in the ground. And then I used that tool on our farm here in Montana to begin reforesting and rewilding a pasture that's been cleared and used pretty much exclusively for grazing cattle for about a century.
You are using the tool to, in a sense, rebuild the land instead of tear it down. And I wonder how your community might feel about that. And I ask that because we live in a very divided country. Montana, where you live, the Mountain West, it's a conservative place. It is protective of its guns. You destroyed something that many people see as precious.
Well, I actually think that, you know, in terms of my community here, there will be about as many reactions as there are different community members. Because my wife and I, we farm on the Flathead Indian Reservation, which is the home of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. All of this work with the revolver and the restoration of forest in a pasture here, I don't know that I would have had the intelligence or strength to undertake it without a series of conversations that I had with Jermaine White, who's a friend of mine, a tribal member, and used to be the director of education and outreach for the tribes. And one of the things that she really impressed upon me is that, well, first of all, that there are ways to honor your ancestors and still break with them and do something new. And also that all of us living here now, we have this profound and really quite simple responsibility to make the next 200 years better than the last 200 in the American West. So when I think about the ways in which my friends in ranching will react to this book, my hope is that they'll understand the book for what it is, which is to say it's a personal exploration and it's a personal struggle with the violence that I think any thinking person can agree is bound up in Western history and, in fact, in the work of ranching. And it's also a book that's not necessarily prescriptive. You know, I'm not telling people what they should do. I'm simply sharing a story about trying to find a clearer view and a better relationship with the things I inherited and the particulars of my life in this landscape that I love so much.
Bryce Andrews' new book is called Holding Fire, A Reckoning with the American West. And Bryce, thank you so much for writing it and spending time speaking with us about it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Holding Fire is now out in paperback.